We're reading Bamidbar chapter 26. This chapter is the census, the Pekudim, of all the tribes, all the Shvotim, in preparation for going to Eretz Yisrael, for the war to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and for dividing the land of Eretz Yisrael, as is explicit in the end of this chapter, that Hashem says, to these the land should be divided. So we understand that the main point of this census was to divide the land according to this census. As we've discussed, the whole of Sefer Bamidbar, called Chumash HaPekudim, the Book of Numbers, in some sense surrounds this census. There was a census already mentioned in the beginning of the book, right? And the main point of this census happening again, as is explained explicitly here, is that the plan changed in between, as we've discussed in Parshas Shlach, Korach, and so on. How the first census was the Bnei Yisrael HaYotzim Eretz Mitzrayim, as is mentioned here in the beginning. These were the tribes, the counts of the people going out of Mitzrayim, whose plan was to march through the desert directly to Eretz Canaan and get there. That plan didn't work out. The generation changed. Even the leaders changed, right? Moshe is still doing this census, as we've been noticing in the third part of Sefer Bamidbar. A certain part of the preparation for conquering the land was done through Moshe himself. In the next chapters, we're going to have him giving over this leadership to Yeshua, but still a major part of the preparations are done. But the leadership besides him, Miriam already died, Aharon already died, and it was changed here. Aharon, for his son Elazar, is doing his part in the census. Aharon also apparently had a big part in organizing the people. And here it's already not Aharon, it's Elazar doing it. And mainly the people changed. These are different people. And they're even organized slightly differently. They're not all the same families. They're not all the same. Some families became bigger. Some families became smaller. Some groups became different. So they had to redo the census in order to match the situation in the new generation that is going to go to Eretz Yisrael. So that's the main point of this census. The location of it is sort of makes sense to be in this last part of the book, which is already in Arves Moav, as we saw in Parshas Chukos. We already arrived to Arves Moav. That's where the whole story of Bullock happened. And apparently that's also where the whole tragedy of Benois Moav happened. So in some sense, this is the right location for it to be. Although, particularly within the stories, there is some disconnect, because we've had the previous chapter, the story of the Benois Moav, which was some kind of tragedy. Something happened badly. And we even had Hashem telling Moshe to take revenge on Moav, on Midian, which seems to have something to do. Might be the same people, or might have been some kind of coalition where everyone played their part and didn't entirely say who they were. And then the story stops and goes to this Pekudim. Of course, one understanding of this would be that since they have to organize an army to do that, of course, there were some wars already. Moshe already did in Parshas Chukos wars, and those maybe were not as organized, or maybe were done somehow in Moshe directly with his charisma leading it, but now we have to do it in an organized way. Moshe won't do it, as we'll see in Parshas Matos when we actually get to the war. Moshe didn't go to that war at all. He sent Elazar, right? Elazar and Pinchas to do it. So we see very clearly this is already Moshe handing over the leadership, the military leadership of the people to the next generation. Therefore, before that, we need to have some kind of census to find out who's going and how is it going to work. But also, there might be other reasons for deliberately cutting up this story with this census in the middle. I don't have a clear explanation for it, but right now, this is what I'm thinking, that this is the meaning. And as we'll see, there's some stories that happened because of the census. We got the story of Bnei Tzelefchad. Then there's some there's other mitzvahs that are somehow come in here, the whole story of the Mesufim of Meades in the next chapters. But also, very importantly, the Moshe giving over his leadership to Yeshua, and that seems to be part of this story. Like I'm saying, that this is where the next wars that's going to happen are not even going to be directly done through Moshe. So there's like an intermediate stage. The previous wars with Sichon and Og and all of that, Moshe himself led. So in the same way that as he led the wars with Paro, with Amalek already had Yeshua in some sense. But anyways, and now he's going to give it over. So there's this new census going to the next generation. And this is where the census is put. There might be also like literary reasons to cut up the story of the war. It shouldn't, you know, we have this tragic loss of Zimri and Pinchas and all of that. So maybe we don't want to continue to dwell on that. So we move on to something different, something more happy. But that's the basic point. Now, this Pekudim, as we said, the whole book is called Book of Numbers after these two censuses mentioned in the beginning and at the end of the book in some sense. And we've been discussing that the whole book of Amidbar is in some way supplementary to the Sefer Vayikra, or supplementary to even Sefer Shemais. And these censuses also have something supplementary in them. So in other words, they're adding a lot of detail and a lot of sort of putting things in place, connecting different threads of the story into one structure. One of their main structures, which the Torah uses when it tries to give an overarching structure of everything, is these genealogies, these censuses, these lists. Just like there's a chronological order, there's also something like Tildis order, the order of who begat who and who's the child of who and who belongs to who. That's just one of the main thing ways in which the world is organized in the Torah, how the Torah organizes the world. And just like in the rest of Amidbar, is adding all kinds of details and putting them in the right place. We'll see a very nice example of this in the Parsha of the Me'adim, of the Mesufim, in the next chapters. Here also, the census, firstly, in Sefer Shemois, we already had numbers of people, right? 600,000 people and so on. But we had some fragmentary reports of exactly how there were 600,000 and so on, but there was never a full accounting of it. Here's where we get the full accounting. And the most full accounting we ever get is in this second census, the census of Parshas Pinchas, the census of chapter 26, is the most full census of the people. It gives us not only the exact name of each Shevet and their amount of people that they had, but also the families. These families were mentioned already in Sefer Shemois, and in some of them, and also in Parshas Bamidbar, but they didn't have the amount of detail, though in some sense it's just adding a word. It's okay, L'mishpachosam, this family, Mishpachas, has such and such, as we'll see inside. That means that this is a level of organization, this is a level of social structure. It doesn't just mean, it's not just adding a word. And that's something that, of course, the people in the land were organized in these clans, in these families, in these groups. So that's some information that we didn't have before. And as we'll see also, into part of the supplementary nature is, it gives us these notes on every time there's someone mentioned who played a part in a previous story or in a future story. It gives us a note, okay, this is that person. And those notes, I think, also have some genealogical meaning, as we'll see when we go through them. So that's enough for a preface to the story. We're going to read it, or go through it quickly. It's a long chapter, a lot of psukim. It starts, V'hi achrei megaifa. Of course, there's an interestingly split. The parsha splits here in the middle of a pasuk, but in some sense, this like belongs to the earlier story. But it's for sure the beginning of this pasuk. V'achrei megaifa, and Hashem tells Moshe and Elazar, count, take up the heads, count the heads of the congregation of the people. Again, from 20 years old, levesavosam, each family, each clan. All who will go to the army, as we said, that shows us that this is mainly a military census. And they do that. They speak to Moshe and Elazar, speak to the people in this place, to show us that this is the census of Arves Moav. They're on the threshold of the land of Israel. They're going to be counted from the 20 years and up, as Hashem told Moshe and the people who were going out of Egypt. So there's this parallelism. Just like then they were counted because they were planning to go directly to Eretz Canaan, now they're being counted again when they're finally doing it again. And here we have the report of the actual census, starting with Reuven, who gets a note that he is the Bechor, is the firstborn of Israel, and that probably means that in some sense Reuven, the Shevet of Reuven, was still the Bechor. In other places we know it says that his Bechor was lost. Here it doesn't seem to say that. It seems like he still has some Bechor, he's counted first. And it gives us the four families who are children of Reuven. So this is not just a list of how many children the missed person Reuven had, but the four families that, of course, did ascribe themselves to these four children of Reuven, but it's something new. There could be a child of Reuven that didn't make a family, and then he would just be part of another brother that had a family, as it says explicitly in Divrei Yomim and other places about certain families that happened to. So when it says, Chanoich Mishpachas HaChanoichi, and so on, for all four, Falei Chetzroin, Lecharmi, it's not just repeating the same information twice. Chanoich Mishpachas HaChanoichi, what it's saying is, Chanoich had a family called Chanoichi, and there's this family which had a certain plot in a place where they live in Eretz Yisrael and so on. So that's the point of this. And also the grandchildren, these are grandchildren of Yaakov, right? Chanoich, the son of Reuven, the son of Yaakov. Some of the great-grandchildren are mentioned also, and that's also probably because those great-grandchildren had some kind of power, some kind of clan, some kind of family for themselves. So we get their count, 43,730. And now we get some grandchildren. Fale had a son, Eliav. Eliav had these three children, Nemuel, Dosan, and Aviram. Now we get a note, and I think that this note is not only so we got to Dasam Aviram, because we've heard of Dasam Aviram in Parshas Koirach, etc., over there, who they were, and Dasam Aviram b'nei Aliyav, the children of Reuven, but here we get exactly who they were. But I think also probably means that they had some power, they had some role, these Dasam Avinim, because, you know, sometimes the next generation, the family, also creates his own family or his own subgroup within the family. So we get this note that these are the Dasam Avinim who fought with Moshe and Aharon and Korach, and they were lost. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed them and Korach. So in other words, although for a time the Dasam Avinim had their own power, their own family, now that they swallowed out, as it says, Vayoivdu mitechakol. Vayoivdu mitechakol literally means, and therefore they had no descendants, they had no families. And so now, if there's nobody that has ascribed himself to the family of the Dasam Avinim, which they could have been if not for that. And as in the same time, 250 men were burnt in the fire, and they became a sign, something like a signpost. A nice means like a flag or a sign. So, as we've said over there, explicitly, that the point of these 250 people dying and all of that was that we should not do like Korach. There's a sign of this, Lemeshmeres Levnei Yisrael. And then there's another note, if Korach Lemeshmeres, the children of Korach didn't die, which is also a genealogical point, right? We'll find later, not in this book so explicitly, a little bit we will, that there are children of Korach. That means because Korach, although Korach was killed, those Mavirim were killed with their whole families. Korach was killed, but his children were not killed. Although it seems like there were in Parshas Korach, we know that they were not. And therefore, there's still a family called Korach. The family Korach was not actually destroyed. Okay, so that's the story of Reuven. And of course, we assume here also that these 250 people might have also been from Shevet Reuven because they're counted here. Although it's not necessarily, we can read it otherwise. We have Shimon with his five families, Nemuel, Yemen, Yochin, Ozerach, Shoel. And 22,200 people are the count of Reuven. Then God, Tzfoin, Chagi, Shuni, Ozni, Ari, Aroidi, Ar'eli, in total 40,500 people. Yehuda. Now for Yehuda also we got this note, and Yehuda is an important family, of course, we'll know later, and Yehuda is the family from which we have Malchus Bes David and so on. So then Yehuda, and this is actually a story of the Yehuda's two sons, but also of like the potential families that were not to be, right? Yehuda, two sons, Erv and Onan, who died in Eretz Canaan, so before this whole story happened, so there's no families from them. And then after Yehuda had turned out to have three families, Shiloh, Peretz, and Zorach, right? We know the stories of their births, specifically in Parshas Vayeshev. And then two of Peretz's children, right? So great-grandchildren of Yaakov also created families, Chetzer and Achomel. As we saw, sometimes the next generation also creates a family. And that's why Yehuda was, and see, Yehuda is one of the bigger tribes, and that's why the next generation also got split into more families, in total 76,500 people. Then we have Yisachar with four families, Tola, Fuva, Yosef, Shimron, total 64,300 people. We have Zvilim with three families, Sered, Elen, Yachlel, total 60,500 people. We have Yosef divided into two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. So again, Yosef is bigger, so he divided into two tribes already in the first generation, and each one of those had children. So Manasseh had Mochir, and even his son had another family, Gilad, and then the family of Gilad. So there's the family of Mochir and the family of Gilad, which are not the same. In other words, Gilad is him and his children, and everyone else would be belonging to the family of Mochir. And Gilad himself divides into a bunch of families. And here we have one more note of one of the children of Chefer, who maybe made some of our family, maybe even his children, his daughters made it families for themselves. Tzilavcha, the son of Chefer, right? The son of Gilad, the son of Mochir, the son of Menashe, had no boys, only girls. And they all had their names here, Machlanei, Chagle, Milka, and Sirtze, their five names. As we'll see later in the next chapter what happened. And obviously these daughters were important in the sense of not just specific individuals who inherited some land, but apparently they created families also. So these are the families of Manasseh. In total, there's 52,700 people. Ephraim, we have their families also. Some of their grandchildren became families also. Shaselech, Becher, and Tachan. And Shaselech himself had a son or family after him, Aaron. In total, there's 32,500 people in Ephraim. Then we have Binyamin with his families, Bela, Ashbel, Achiram, Shfufam, Chufam. And Bela himself has two families divided into Ed and Ammon. And in total, 45,600 people. People meaning warriors, right? Yetzit Tzava. Then we have Don with one family, Shucham. And in total, 64,400 people. It's interesting that Don had so many people, but only one family. It's one of the interesting things about Shevet Don. In general, we could calculate like which ones, how many people there is per family. Some of them have bigger families, some are smaller. Okay, Asher with his children Yimna, Yishva, Vriya, and Vriya himself, his two children, Chevra, Malkiel, divided families, and Asher's daughter, Serach. Apparently, she's mentioned here, not just to tell us that Asher had a daughter, probably many of the children of Yaakov had daughters. The point is that this Serach apparently created some kind of family separately, or had some name for herself. A name always usually means, like, you leave a family, you leave some inheritance that belongs to you. Total of Asher is 53,400. Then we have Naphtali with families, Yachzel, Guna, Yetzer, and Shilem, in total 45,400 people. And we have the total count of all the people, 601,730. And we have the point of all of this. The point of all of this is another mitzvah, Dabra Shalom HaShalemer. To these you should, and separate, you should divide the land. But Mispah Shem is by the count of names. Shem is, I think, means the named people, as we have Anshe Shem. Anshe Shem means people who have a family who's named after them. So Mispah Shem is means each family, like Shechem, Asriel, and so on, they get some inheritance, some Nachla. And then it says, you should give the greater one a greater Nachla, and the smaller one a smaller Nachla, Ishlefi Fikudav. So now, there is a question here, asked usually, so is it according to people or according to families? And if it's just according to people, then what's the point of the families? But of course, the family is a kind of like governmental or organizational unit. And therefore, a bigger family who has more people gets a bigger part in the land. But that doesn't mean that it's given to the individuals, given still to the sheva, to the family. And then one more part of weight, how to divide by goyel, which will be divided by a goyel, l'shmoiz matzavoysam, bein rav lema'at. And there's some people that think that there's a contradiction here, because if it's a goyel, then it means that sometimes the larger people would get the smaller land or so on, if it's just a goyel, a lot that divides it. But I think what it literally means is that the goyel only decides where you should get. So of course, there's in some sense, and sometimes these things are probably very complicated, because in our land, the carrying capacity of a land is not entirely, like, it doesn't work entirely with square feet or square kilometers, depends on many variables. So some of these variables, since there's no, the fairest way to divide them would be by lot. So that's what it's saying. And some in the end, and therefore, you can't complain, you know, like it was a goyel and that's who won. But that doesn't mean that there isn't some logic to, before you make the goyel, to how you divide it and so on. And probably the details are not discussed here, but I think that's the logical solution for this problem. And now, after we have the census of all the people, we have the census of Levi and his families. And it's very nice that here, the division of the land was said before that, as we'll say in the end of the story of Levi, because Levi did not inherit in the land. He had his own cities, as we'll learn. But Levi does not take a part in the land, and therefore his census is separate and said after. And Levi, of course, had three main families, Gershon, Kasa, and Merari. And these families themselves had families to themselves, right? So Levi has. So first, the pasuk describes all the total families of Levi. In other words, the lowest level families, Livni, in total are five families: Livni, Chavroni, Machli, Mishi, and Karchi. So there's some missing here, as Rashi notes. There's some unclarity what happened. Like I said, things change sometimes, and then it goes back to describe specific genealogies within Levi. So it talks about the Kohas having Amram with his wife Yocheved and their three children, Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam. Aaron having four children, Nadav, Avi, Eloz, Ve'Samar. And of course, Nadav, Avi died. Bakrivim, Ezor, Lefnei Hashem, as we've learned in Parshas Shemini, they brought foreign fire, strange fire for Hashem. Therefore, they died. And therefore, otherwise, obviously, Nadav, Avi don't leave families. Eloz, Ve'Samar have families. And in total, in Levi, there is 23,000 people. And these are counted not from 20 as the people that go in the army are counted, but from 30 years old, because they are not counted. Less pakti means they're not counted, and also they didn't go to conquer, they're not part of the army, because they did not have inheritance. So, you know, it goes both ways. You don't fight, you don't get the land. They have their other jobs, as we've discussed in the beginning of this book. That's a big part. And of course, that's why the note here, I think that's the basic reason why Levi is shorter here. It doesn't give a lot of the details, because we already know that this book talks about that at length already. And here we have the final, the ending of this census, of this chapter. These are the census, the counts of Moshe and Elazar, who counted the people, as we've already said in the beginning, and was not one man in this from the first census of Moshe and Aaron, which was Bemidbar Sinai, as they went out of Mitzrayim, so in a different location. And why? As Hashem told them that they will die in the desert, as he told them in Parashat Shlach. So all of them died, besides for two, Kalev ben Yefune and Yeshua ben Nun. Of course, Moshe himself also will die in the desert. So he's not in the list, and we'll see in the next chapters what happened because Moshe died. So that's the end of this chapter.